Hi there, folks, and welcome back, or just welcome if this is your first time tuning in to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima Magen, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by our sponsor, Alex Watanabe of Snaps.talk. Alex provides excellent and super affordable photography and videography services in Tokyo, Japan, starting at only 3,000 Japanese yen. You can check out his work in this episode's show notes. We'll link to his profiles, his email address, and a gallery of photos that he's done for us at our last face-to-face business seminar way back in 2019. Don't be shy, get in touch with Alex on snaps.talk, that's T-O-K, at gmail.com, or via his Instagram account, Tokyo Night Owl, and he'll sort you right out. All right, so for today's episode, back by popular request, he's another of our Clubhouse room chat sessions. Just a reminder, listeners, these are held every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Japan time, which means tomorrow at the time of this recording. And we chat and we take questions on all things related to real estate in Japan. Our panel of experts includes Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo agent who specializes in family homes and loans for expats in the greater Tokyo area, Tracy Northcott, who specializes in short-term rentals, and yours truly on all things related to investment properties in Japan. And in this feature chat today, which was recorded early last month, we take on a bunch of questions from very active audience on plenty of topics, so from availability of home loans, investment visas, and through holiday homes that can be utilized as short-term stays during the owner's absence, and management of these properties via management companies, investment properties in various locations around the country, and how to best manage those, and much, much more. So this particular conversation was a pretty long one. The questions just kept on coming, but it's packed full of useful info for anyone who participated or just listened in. So I hope you'll find some value in it as well. So enjoy, and I'll see you again on the other side.
So thank you guys for joining. Most of you know us already. My name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. I focus on family home purchases for personal use. Ziv on the far right, he helps people with investments in Japan. So buyers are looking to purchase investment properties. Then that's his thing. And Tracy, so you, Minpaku queen or the Airbnb queen? What shall we refer you to? Which queen do you prefer?
Probably Minpaku. So Airbnb, I have a problem with Airbnb. That using that name as a description of what I do. Mm-hmm. Because Airbnb is a brand, like Kleenex, like Xerox, like Hoover. It's a brand rather than what you do. And it's really just come into being a noun and a verb and rather than being the marketplace. And I guess I'm just trying to do my bit for helping people see themselves as a business rather than as a wheel in someone else's cog. Building their business on someone else's land, which is what you're doing when you hitch your wagon to Airbnb. So that's just me and my soapbox a little bit. I recognize that you know, if I say Airbnb when I'm in rooms and if I'm doing my marketing, I'm doing my SEO, I really do have to use the word Airbnb because that's what people are searching on and that's what people understand. But at the same time, I'm also just trying to educate the market that it's more than Airbnb. It's because you're the host and you're the one providing the product and delivering the service. That's not Airbnb. The Airbnb is a marketplace, which is a great marketplace. Don't get me wrong. It's a great marketplace, but it's not your identity.
Sure. Because my point with the Minpaku queen thing is Minpaku is very specific to people in Japan and who actually know about it and know what it is for. Other like Ziv's potential investors, for example, potential clients, they're overseas. They may not understand Minpaku, what it means at all. So that's my point about if it's the Minpaku queen.
Sure. Fortunately, I'm bilingual.
How about just the hostess with the mostest?
Hostess with the mostest.
I like that.
Exactly.
I like that a lot.
And hostess means something very, very different here as well. So.
Yeah. Well, even like, you know, the short-term stay queen is also, was that like a temporary girlfriend? Who knows? There's plenty of ways we can take it. Let's get on with it, I think. Actually, so Tracy's introduction, so the hostess, the mostest. is so anyone who's looking for short-term investment, either to do short-term management of their properties, for example, Minpaku, Airbnb type, or other short-term or monthly type stays, then Tracy is she both consults and does management for properties using that particular niche that you just heard us talk about. So hopefully with the three of us kind of experts, I feel strange calling us that, but there's the specialists in our field, respective fields, we should be able to answer most of your questions.
Emil, you're an expert. Own it, mate. Own it. You're an expert.
Yo. That's it. I'm going to change my yo to expert with a question mark. Bertrand, Christian, how are you guys going today?
Good. How are you guys? Happy to be in this room and talk about real estate. So from my personal background, I own a few investment properties in the Kanto area and Kansai area. And always looking to expand, and that's mostly 99% residential property I own.
I just noticed which Christian you are. How are you going, mate?
Hey, we never really talked in person, though.
So. No, but I keep now that I'm looking at your profile. Oh, I know this Christian.
Good to meet you in person. So yeah, I'm really interested in investment properties and. Right now, I only do long-term rentals, but always been playing with, converting potentially some of them into some short-stay accommodation. I've got a really large, centrally located property in Osaka that might be good for that. But given the current climate, I think I need to wait a few more months. That's what I'm interested in. And I know Emil previously, so with some discussions on a private home purchase that I'm still looking at. So. I need to ping you as well again, Emil.
Definitely. Okay, so look, I guess in terms of that, so Tracy is definitely the person to speak to in terms of, I think we've discussed in the past when we've met, I also have some Airbnb properties, but that's like a bit of a side thing for me, where it's for Tracy, she consults and she's a much better host than I could ever be. So but she can actually answer a lot of your questions regarding the very specifics of that, and that's what this is about. So feel free to ask a very, very specific question. I do want to say this is being recorded. So Zip has a podcast. So yeah, I should have said that earlier. Zip has a podcast, which we'll explain in a moment. But yeah, so what we've been doing is the recordings of this particular session end up being just put on his podcast. We only refer to you by first name. So not your last name. So on the podcast, hopefully there's no identifying information.
And it's only the audio, so no one's going to see your face if they appear on your icons.
Sure. So yeah, but so if you are a bit sensitive to sort of the information that you are sharing on this, feel free to ping us directly. So with myself, you can reach people are able to reach out to me through Instagram DM. Tracy, what's your preferred method? Instagram DM.
Yeah, Instagram DM is fine. You can find me through my blog. I write about a lot of this stuff. I have an amazing blog that covers all areas of the short-term rental industry, and you can find me through that. And also you can find me through Instagram, which is linked to my Clubhouse profile. I'm actually really keen to hear what questions you've got. I could talk about lots of things short-term rental, but if I can answer some specific questions that might be useful to you and also add some value to the other people listening on the podcast or listening in the audience here.
Yeah. For me personally, it's I wouldn't have time to look after property and then dealing with, welcoming people, getting the cleaning organized and everything, the whole communication. I got a pretty time-consuming full-time job, and for me it would have to be in a way that I use some kind of a middleman or an agency to do that kind of work. How do you go about that? Do you run that? Do you run all your own properties, or do you provide a service to people who would like to start a Minpaku business?
I mean, I can answer that question in two ways. I can talk about my experience, but I can also talk about what is sort of the general market standard out there, because I sort of handle both. So I So for my Minpaku business, I have a combination of ownership. So ones that I own myself, ones that I do rental. The Americans call it rental arbitrage, or the UK people call it rent to rent, which is basically like subleasing with permission, which of course you've got to do in Japan if you're you need to work with the landlords. And then also I work directly with people who own the property and who and work as a co-host or work as it's a management style. So I would take the property, and it would be either using the furniture that the owner already had, or the owner would buy the furniture and put it in, and then so that is an asset that you own. And then I would manage the whole thing, from listing the property, getting the property ready, having the systems in place, knowing, vetting the customers, making sure that they're the right style of guests, managing the customers, managing their expectations, doing all the hospitality side of it, making sure the cleaners are set. So all of that stuff is what I would take care of, and what a good manager would take care of for you. And I charge a profit share on that. What profit share you're able to negotiate is really dependent on the situation. And, you know, it could be anywhere from 30% to 50%, and that's either on a gross or a net, depending on the model of the manager and of the owner. So I typically work with people who have properties in Japan that they've maybe been transferred overseas, and they still want to come, when they come back to Japan, they want to be able to use their own property. They're either Japanese, or, you know, a couple that have, you know, one partner Japanese, one partner not. You know, they've been transferred overseas, or they're overseas and they want to be transferred in Japan. So there's a lot of different ways. But basically it's an asset that they want to be able to use for themselves part-time, and then part-time to be making money. Typically the return on the short-term market is much, much higher than it is for long-term, but it does come at a cost, and that cost is the slightly more wear and tear on your property, and also the fact that it is that, you know, there's different people in and out, but also there's a management fee to pay. The upside is that you know that it's going to be cleaned and spotless on a regular basis if you've got a good manager, and sometimes taken care of a little bit better than the long-term rentals. But like I said, you will need to replace the wallpaper a bit more frequently, and there is a bit more wear and tear because there's different people, there's suitcases and all that stuff, which is a little bit harder on the house. Utilities can be a little bit higher because people on holidays or people in a different house don't know how to, and they're not thinking about how to minimise their bills. So there's a lot of little pieces in that, but still the money that you can earn on a short-term rental on a non-COVID time is far exceeding what you would earn on a long-term rental. So there's pros and cons on both sides. Did that answer some of those questions, or did you want to drill down to some more?
That answered all the questions I had. I was especially curious on what kind of fee I would have to calculate in and see and run a model and see if it makes it worth it. But no, that's something I'm definitely interested in, and we'll definitely reach out to you.
I would, you know, whether you hire me or whether you hire another person, the sort of things that you need to do for your due diligence is making sure that the manager you hire knows who their ideal guest is and has a documented and a robust system for vetting guests and managing guests and doing the check-ins and check-outs. So that would be my advice to you as a landlord. Make sure that you do your due diligence on the manager to make sure that they are only accepting guests who are going to be respectful and responsible, not just to your house, but also to your community and your neighbours. And a good manager should be able to have full transparency and show you how they're managing guests and how they're managing the vetting process. And if they can't show you that, then they're not the manager for you, because then they're really not going to be looking after your property very well. I would suggest paying a little bit more in terms of a profit share to, like, allow that the manager can earn a little bit more money, but those are the managers who will be taking better care of your property. It's like, for example, when I work with a cleaner, I'm hiring a cleaner who's going to do the best job for me, not the cheapest one, because these are the systems in place that are going to make or break the business and also be good for your property.
I can just add from the financial side, Christian, we don't actually do Minpaku, but we do have a few customers who do monthly rentals as opposed to long-term leases. And they charge similar fees. So the monthly managers charge also 25 or 30%. And monthly generally tends to yield less than Minpaku. But even with the monthly, we're very close to when the property is in a good location and a good profile and under good management, they do yield close to double what the long-term lease is. So with Minpaku, it can be much higher than that. It's definitely worth it. If the property is of the right profile, and a good manager will also let you know in advance before taking on the property whether that one would be suitable for their types of guests.
Well, that's good information too. Now, I have a property in Osaka where actually a few units in there were rented by a company that does monthly rentals. So I was thinking, you know, why not do that on my own actually? But this is right now targeted to Japanese people. It's mostly people who have some work assignment in that city, and I think that's what they do it for. But
it is a lot more engaged. You'll notice, even if you're not doing the management yourself, you do need to be on top of the bookings and know how well you're doing with the property financially. It's a little bit more similar to running a business than just a long-term lease type of property, and there are more decisions to be made. So a good manager will probably alleviate that. You won't have to do these things on your own, but you will have to make decisions on a more regular basis. So there is that to consider.
Good point.
I have a question on assessment of the property value. Sorry, I'm in a bit of a noisy place. I have a few properties, but not in Japan. It's an overseas country. And I am trying to start thinking about buying a property in Japan, either to get a loan and pay for that long term. So I wanted to know what would be the factors needed to be considered about the property location. Mainly, should I go for a new building or look for a already existing building? And when I look at the apartment, what kind of floors should I look at? And the key points that should make the property attractive and can offer like a better resale if I decided to sell it later on. It's kind of a wide question, but...
Is that for you to live in or an investment property, Bertrand?
To live in, but I'm not sure if I'm staying in Japan like really long. So if I left, I would be also investing in it.
Okay, so I'll get on to answering that one. I mean, if anyone else has questions, feel free just to raise your hand and we'll bring you up to the stage so we can offer answer your question. So this two things to consider, right, is when the difference between a personal property and an investment property, right? When it's investment, you just care about yield. You don't care about, you know, your lifestyle associated with it. And generally, investment, what gives a great return is a small one room or 1K or even one LDK apartment. Whereas if, and not maybe not necessarily in Tokyo, whereas if you want to live in a place, then you know, for several years, you may not get the best return, but you care about your lifestyle and how nice it's going to be. So depends on how long you want to be in Japan. It sounds to me like you may want something that's actually nice for you to live in. You're going to be comfortable, but it's also going to has some successful upside in the future, right? You don't want it to be completely worthless when it's time for you to sell. And my general comments to that is, like, because no one wants to buy a place, even if it's for themselves, that's going to be worth nothing, right? They would, even though it's a family home, they would like it to have some value in the future, which is perfectly normal. So what I tell people generally is, if you don't have any unusual requirements, if you want a standard, ordinary place that's going to be nice, that you're going to be comfortable in, then that, like, you know, and by that I mean it gets good sunlight, it's in a good location, not too far from the train station, and not too far outside of Tokyo, close to supermarkets, close to schools, if it's a 3LDK, for example, a place that people may have kids. If it's good for you and what you would be happy living in, then chances are it's going to be also good for a future tenant or a future home buyer when you want to sell it. Okay. What is not a very good idea is thinking, you know what, I want to build a house with a swimming pool on the roof. Okay. Then, well, you paid a lot for the swimming pool on the roof, but guess what? When you want to resell it, no, that value is not going to be there. Okay. Or if you want a very unusually large block in an area in Saitama, right, that's 20 minutes from the station, you know, you've paid a premium, you've paid a bit extra to build your custom house on a very large block in a location just because you want the big garden, but that's not going to be reflected in the resale price because that's not the generally what the market would like. So as long as, but if you have ordinary needs and ordinary requirements, general, you know, market, you know, interests, then in the future when you want to rent it out or sell it, then the market is going to respond positively to the quality of your property. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thanks a lot for that. Yeah, it's very interesting when you mentioned that the small property will give you a higher yield. So for the investment part, if you are going to take an apartment for investment, does the bank also finance that, or you need to pay that for yourself?
So there's two types of loans. Home loan and investment loan. Usually for a home loan, the bank can give you 100% financing or even 105% financing. And by that, I mean they pay for the 100% of the property value plus 5% of closing costs. The bank will pay it all. Okay? So the fees and the taxes, etc., the bank pays it all. You don't pay anything out of pocket. However, if it is an and also for a home loan, the interest rate might be about 0.5%, which is 0.7%. So very, very low interest rate. If you're looking for an investment property, the bank will want 20 to 40% down payment. Okay, so the bank's only going to give you 60 to 80% of the property value. And the interest rate will be closer to 2.5% to maybe 3.5%.
Got it. Very clear. Thanks a lot, Emilio.
And the criteria for properties is a bit different. They're usually a lot more flexible on the home loans than they are on investment loans. You'll find that a lot of the lenders, when it comes to investment loans, they're only going to approve certain areas or certain types of properties. Whereas with a home loan, they're usually quite okay. And Emilio will correct me if I'm wrong, but they're usually quite okay with lending as long as the property is not too old, wherever you want to live is probably okay for at least one of the local lenders.
Yes, precisely. So, you know, even if you want to live, you know, in a house 20 minutes away from a station in Saitama, then they'll be okay with that. So I focus more on like the Tokyo area, so I can't really speak to very different prefectures, but yeah, so they're generally okay with that if it meets the requirements for a home, if it meets requirements for a home loan, for a home. So if the property is under 40 square meters, right, then they won't give you a home loan for it. They're like, well, that's not a home. That's like just a rental apartment. It's too small to classify as a home. So they won't really do that. And similarly, if you have, you know, if you are married with two children and you want a 1LDK, they won't give you a home loan for that. They'll say, well, hold on, why, like, this is not sufficient for your home. You've already outgrown it, or you're going to outgrow it very soon. They'll scrutinize that as well. But if you're genuinely looking for a place for you to live and you're going to call it home for several years, then probably what you're looking for will be fine for the bank. Okay. So,
Emil, I had a question. Sorry, I lost you on the down payment. Could you please repeat the down payments again, both for investment property and own home?
Just hold on one second, Priya. So, Bertrand, so do you have any... I'll get back to you in a second, Priya. But, Bertrand, do you have an additional question to what I said?
Thanks, guys. Very clear from my side.
Okay. So, Priya, so your question was about for the home loan down payment or for investment loan down payment?
Both, actually. I'm sorry. I was just in the underground and I lost you for a second. And that was the most important part for me. So could you please just quickly elaborate on it?
Sure.
Thank you.
So, so if you want a home loan in Japan, if you meet certain conditions, and by certain conditions, I mean you have a full-time job, pretty much. And if you're a permanent resident or if your spouse is a Japanese citizen or permanent resident, then we can generally get you 100% financing. Okay, so that means there's no down payment. So for example, if you want to buy a property that's 50 million yen, so $500,000 equivalent, then the bank will pay 100%. The bank will pay $500,000, right? Will finance you that much. You just need to pay the closing cost. Closing cost is usually about 5% for your own residence, right? 5 to maybe 7%. So on a 50 million yen property, that's about 2.5 million yen of cash that you need to pay the agency fee and taxes and transfer fees and lawyer fees, etc. However, some banks, if you are, you know, generally if you're a permanent resident and you've been employed at the same company for several years and it's a decent, you know, substantial size company that you work for, not self-employed, then they'll actually pay for those 5% of closing fees as well. So for a 50 million yen property, the bank will give you 52.5 million yen. So they'll pay you for loan. So you've actually, it's cost you nothing out of pocket.
All right, great. And what about the other scenario where the person or the folk that are going to move in are new to Japan but still have full-time work or, you know, substantial income?
Again, if you can still possibly get 100% financing, right? But it depends on your residency. So if you have permanent residency, or it sounds like you maybe don't, but if your spouse is Japanese or permanent resident, then you could still get it. If not, if just say, you know, you've just come to Japan 6 months ago and you and your wife are both foreigners, but you work for good companies and have good income, you'll probably need about 20% deposit. So the bank can give you 80% financing.
Okay.
And you need 20% deposit and the 5% closing fees. So consider you need about 25% cash in order to be able to close the deal. And so let's say someone, you've lived here in Japan for 6 months or 1 year, then yeah, expect that you'll need about 25% cash. So just to let people know, so in Japan, the real estate agents, so I'm an agent, we also act as a mortgage broker. So we deal directly with the banks. We have a loan officer assigned to our agency from the major banks. And so we deal with these banks directly, and we can submit all the mortgage documents on your behalf, and we discuss with the bank. The only time you need to speak with the bank is when we go in together for the contract signing at the bank branch. But we don't actually get paid by the bank any kind of mortgage issuance fee or any kind of kickback commission. Our interest as an agent is to be able to get you the financing so we can make the commission on the sale of the property. So we don't actually have any interest in giving you a loan from any particular bank. Our interest is to get you the best kind of loan available so you're able to buy a property comfortably. So that's our interest in getting you a home loan.
Great. And would the same condition almost apply if the property is for investment? As I said, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you well when you were elaborating on that. I hope it's not a problem. You're repeating everything probably.
Oh, no, that's fine. For investment, they will be a little bit more strict. Generally, you'll need 20 to 40% deposit. The interest rate will be from, say, 2.5% to 3.5%. And to be honest, I'm not too sure how your residency will affect it, or how long your time will in Japan will impact it.
They're not available to non-permanent residents in most cases.
Even Prestia, they won't give us like the second home or investment loan to non-PR holders.
Not unless you set up a local Japanese company, which they can go after in case they need to foreclose.
Okay, sure. All right. Well, there you go. Yeah.
That we will settle also. Let's see. But thank you so much. It was very helpful. I couldn't find much online, actually. It was a bit confusing. Thanks for the tips.
The only difference there, Puya, for investment loans is some of the Chinese, Hong Kong, Taiwanese banks, if you or your spouse have any kind of residency in those countries, and then they can kind of go after you there, then they would potentially approve it even if you're a non-permanent resident.
Great. All right, so, yeah, I'm pretty new here. I mean, it should take a while for me probably to wrap my mind around it. It's just that it wasn't time for me to make such investment, so I'm just inquiring, but hopefully soon. Thanks again, guys. I'm going to go down.
Thanks for joining, Priya.
Quick question on the size of the company. Emily, you've stressed a lot on, like, you work for a sizable company or stable company. So, yeah, how much does that affect your... the application for either personal loan or investment loan, assuming you have a PR and you're applying for a loan, but you work, say, for a startup, does it make a little different than if you're working for a big company, Amazon, or those kind of well-established companies?
Yeah, so if they got like 5 to 10 employees or more, then you should actually be okay. And if you want for 100% loan, if you have permanent residency and you've been working with them for a few years, then you should be able to get 100% financing. But if it's only two employees, two staff, they may not feel very secure about that. So they may not actually want to give you 100% financing because, well, what if you lose your job, right? Because it's such a small... company. And that's even for the individual, right? If you work now during COVID, right? If you work for a company like Sony or Dentsu, although, you know, they're having mass downsizings, you'll probably feel more secure than if you're working at a company with only two staff, right? During this time. So yeah, if the company's been going for a few years and you have, you know, a handful of staff or more, then you should be okay. But probably just for 100% financing, the 105% financing, they kind of sometimes, depends on a few circumstances, your income as well, and how long you've been at the company, et cetera, and how long you've been resident for. But if you are, if you're working for a large company, then 105% is really quite easy, quite often.
Right, yeah. It's really interesting to see that. Maybe it's one of the things that one should consider before moving from a company to another, in case he's like thinking about applying to
so on. Definitely. So on that note, so generally they'll want you to have been at a company for at least 12 months, right, before you change. And 2 years is even better. You might get slightly more money if it's been 2 years. Okay, a little bit, not much, but it could be the deciding factor. But definitely at least 3 months, because a lot of companies will have in Japan a preliminary period. Even if you start a new company as a seishin, right, permanent employee, in the contract there's a 3-month probationary term. By like Japanese labor law, generally 3 months the company can fire you if they don't fill you up to scratch. After that 3-month period, then the bank will be happy with loaning you the money, but maybe not 100% financing. So we do tell people, if you're going to purchase a place and you're also considering changing your job, probably better to purchase it. They stay in the job for a few extra months and purchase the property and then do the switch.
All right, so a few follow-up questions here is, after you get the loan, assuming you work for a big company, Do you have to stick with that company for some time as well, or once you get
no.
the money, you can change your job?
Well, what, you can just not even, you can quit and just be a complete, like a bum. I was going to say homeless, but you won't be homeless because you'll have a house. You don't have to work there. Once you've gotten a loan and you purchase a place, you have, as long as you meet the mortgage repayments, you have no obligation to maintain employment at any particular place.
Nice. So regarding the income, you mentioned once that the maximum amount of loan you can get is like 7 times your annual income. But for that specific area, do they also factor like side income or side job?
No.
Only the income you get for your full-time salary?
Yes. So the question, just to the audience, and also if anyone else wants to come up, please push the raise hand button. We'll bring you up to the stage to answer any questions you may have. So what Bertrand is referring to is, I've said in the past, in general, the bank will loan you about 7 times your annual income. Okay, so if you get, your company pays you, I'll use easy numbers, they pay you 10 million yen, 7 million yen a year, then you can probably borrow around 70 million yen, not a 7 million yen, from the bank for a home loan. If you, and Bertrand's question is, okay, for example, you have 10 million yen employment income, and maybe you have some side business that, like you sell stuff on Yahoo Auctions or Rakuten, and you make another 2 million yen of profit from that side business, can the bank, you could calculate your assessment using 12 million yen? And generally, no, okay? Because they only take into consideration the stable employment. Right, not your side business employment.
Right,
but makes sense. Also, but I'll give you a different scenario. What if you don't have a job? You're only self-employed. 100% of your income is from Yahoo Auction selling. Right, you're a kojin jigyo, you're a sole proprietor, and you are a consultant. Yeah, you're a consultant, for example, or you sell retail. And so all your income is purely from your own individual business. And if your income is 10 million yen from that or 12 million yen, what will the bank do? The bank will then assess it. Okay, we're going to give you, 7 times of your profit, not your revenue, your profit. Okay. But we will require you pay 20% deposit. The bank won't give you 100% financing if you're a sole proprietor or if you're a business owner. Even if you own the KK, you have a kabushiki gaisha, and that makes the money, and then you pay yourself a salary as a daikyo toshi marigaku. They know if you're the representative director, daikyo toshi marigaku, you will also, they won't give you 100% financing. It's best to be a salary man and just a straight up salary man.
Wow, that's very sad to hear, to be honest.
There is one workaround. There is one loaning system that will incorporate your side income as well, right? So let's say you earn 10 million yen, or let's say you earn 5 million yen from your primary employer and another 2 million yen of profit from your business sales. Then there is one that will consider the 7 million yen total. But you must have permanent residency for that. And they can pay 100% of your loan, right? 100% financing, but only up to 80 million yen. So if the property you want to buy is up to 80 million, that's okay. Anything after that, you need to pay cash yourself.
Right. Yeah. In Japan, the bonus is a big portion of the salary in most companies. Do they factor that as well?
Yes and no. It depends on your bonus. So in Japan, what's pretty common is the bonus is that your salary is divided into, 13 or 14 months, and they'll pay you an additional, the 13th or 14th month, an additional kind of fixed bonus throughout the year, maybe in one time or two times throughout the year. And that's quite common in Japan. So they understand that a typical bonus like that, where it's pretty safe that you'll get it, they consider that in the calculation, right? So a good way to base it on is look at last year's tax withholding slip,
right? How much money did you earn last year gross from your company? Look at the biggest number on that paper, and that's the one they'll base it on. However, some people are in sales, right? Their base salary might be 300,000 yen a month, right? 3 million yen base salary a year, but they're making 12 million yen, right? Think like a recruiter, for example, right? Or someone in sales, they get huge up, like it fluctuates. And if they see the past, hey, 2 or 3 years, there's significant fluctuation, 20 to 50% fluctuation in your annual total take-home salary, that's not good for your application. They might take the lowest of the past 3 years or the average of the past 3 years, not just the most recent year, if that's the case.
All right, thank you for that. So I don't have one more question, but maybe I'll allow other people first that they have, so I'm not really in the conversation. So I'll stop for a minute.
Well, I tell you what, Bertrand, so look, if anyone else in the audience has a question, please push the raise hand button and I'm happy to bring you up on stage and you can ask your question. But yeah, no one else has raised their hand, Bertrand, so you can feel free to go ahead and ask a question.
All right, awesome. So, I guess it's part of income, like how a bank would assist your income still. Only if you're a salaryman or only if you're like, you work for a Japanese company for a long time. But some people would have some investments overseas or some properties they are managing or some direct income that is coming from outside of Japan. Is it safe to assume that they are not also factoring that, even if you have some documentation to prove it?
Well, that documentation is your Japanese tax return, okay? So are you declaring it in Japan? Yes or no? So then they're not going to look at it, right? Because they can't just... If you have overseas income, you generally need to be paying it in Japan. We have cases. So I'll give you the other extreme case. Some people live in Japan, but they're getting paid, like they're a full-time employee, but their company is paying them overseas. Maybe they work for an American company, right? Or they have an American entity, and they're getting all their salary paid into the U.S., right? And they live in Japan and they're declaring it in Japan. Even though they're declaring it, the banks will still say, you know what? The company you're working for isn't even in Japan. It's not Japan-sourced income. We won't look at it. So it's actually quite tough. Even there are some people in Japan that they have real estate investments, investment properties in Japan that are creating rental income. A lot of times they won't look at it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand the reasoning behind it.
What can help, though, is if you just have savings. So when they want to loan you money, they'll say, like, how much money do you have? How much cash do you have? Are you financially sound, right? What if you lose your job, etc.? Can you still pay the mortgage? So if you show, look, I have in the U.S. a stock portfolio of, you know, 8 million yen, like 80,000 US dollars, right? Or I own a house in Australia. Look, I've got this house that I own in Australia or the UK, etc. And you show the document that you have an asset there, they won't count any of the income from it in your calculation, but it will give them confidence that you have money. You have access to money should you need it to pay for your mortgage. Okay. Yeah. So that's unusual. Yeah. Okay. Hey, Leah. How
are
you doing?
Hey, Emil. Hi, guys. How are you going?
Very well.
Yeah. Emil, it's kind of. I mean, you know what I've been like looking for lately because I asked you about it, but we kind of took it as a back burner. But I'm still always like trying to find out more information. You know how we're trying to either kind of look for a mountain home or a second home. And obviously I know that the flat 35 system has gotten harder to receive, especially because of the restrictions with like earthquake proof houses, like it can't be an IKEA property pretty much. What are your thoughts on like, I've seen some banks do like a second home interest loan, like is, and of course it's a lot of it is in Japanese and me just trying to get through it, or is it worth it, you think, like in terms of interest and like ideally we would love 100% financing. We don't want to put in our own cash. And yeah, and you know, I would probably move my residency up to wherever it is per se. And yeah, so yeah, just thoughts on that, like for a second home, and eventually maybe it'll become like investment in the sense that, you know, when we're not there, friends can stay there, but would we put it on Airbnb? I don't know, sort of thing. Sorry, it's a bit of a roundabout question.
When you say mountain home, Leah, where are you referring to?
Pretty much anywhere my husband can snowboard. And hopefully somewhere that's also usable in the summer, because I don't do winter sports. So we were looking like around Lake Nogiri, because a lot of our friends are up there, and it's beautiful. You know, it's great access to the mountains in the snow, and it's got a beautiful lake. But a lot of them are Akia properties, so it's just, you know, it's constantly putting in your own cash, which in terms of an investment, you know, you could invest your money in better things.
Yeah, I'll let Emil answer the second home mortgage part of things, but then I think Tracy and I might have a few things to say about that.
Great.
Sure. So look, about the second home mortgage, to be honest, I don't deal so much with these properties in other locations, so I can't speak from proper experience with these, you know, like stuff outside of Tokyo. I know it's, we can kind of wing it for places in Tokyo sometimes. The issue is, like, with second home, it needs to be your second home, right? Not for a business. So, and even then, it's generally for a second home is, they kind of consider how much extra your borrowing capacity is on top of your existing loan, right? So I said before, you know, in Bertrand's discussion, if your income is 10 million yen, your household income, right? You and your spouse combined household income is 10 million yen from typical salaried employment. And you want to, if you've already spent, so you can borrow 70 million yen. That's how much you can borrow based on your 10 million yen household income. You can borrow 70. You've already purchased a house in Tokyo, your primary residence, your first home, for 60 million yen. Then even if you were to get a second loan, the bank will say, look, you've already got a 60 million yen mortgage. Your borrowing capacity is 70, so we're going to give you another 10 million at most. Okay? They're not going to give you another 50 or 60 million, because then you're overextending yourself. Okay?
That's fair. I get that.
Yeah. So yes, you could get a second mortgage, but you could get a second home loan. A second house loan. The interest rate will be, I think, about around between 2 and 3% is what they are. Maybe like in the high ones if you're fortunate. And it's unlikely to be 100% financing. Maybe 80%. They'll want some money down. But also your story needs to be a bit compelling, why you want to live there. But in your case, I think you do want, you know, even we are working now, a lot of people sort of work from home. So, you know, being able to be out there or whatnot is more understood by banks, right? You don't need to be in central Tokyo anymore. But definitely don't tell them about how you plan on renting it out or turning it into a business, because then that's very much an investment. But of course, remember, they're going to be strict about the type of property that you want, similar to Flat 35, because if it's just they need some security. If they're going to loan you the money and you default, they need to be able to sell it and recoup their money. And if it's just a dump, in some rural area, they're going to have difficulty doing that. So that's why they may not be attracted to that particular proposition. But yeah, so you can get financing for a second home, but it's going to be a little bit depends on your existing financing and employment situation.
No, that's great. Exactly. I didn't know exactly how that second house loan worked, that it is, you know, just minus whatever you haven't used if you haven't gone over your initial mortgage amount, which is great to know. I mean, we're still not sure. It might never eventuate, but it never hurts to research.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Definitely. I suggest speak to Prestia. They have an English support, and just go and ask them, because they do promote their second home loan, their second house loan. Go there and show them. Say, look, you know, show them your tax documents. I'm sure you've just finished up. You know, you just sort of prepared your tax for 2020, right? Go show them. Say, look, this is my husband and I. This is what we've got. These are, and your existing loan, how much you've got for your existing home loan. How much can we borrow for a second house? And just ask. So first thing you need to find out, like, you know, when we do the property search, how much will the bank finance you? So they're going to do that based on your current income and your existing loan. Okay, they're going to say, look, we are comfortable to loan you this much at maybe 80% or 100%, whatever it is. Speak to them, and then you can decide, well, you can ask them, look, are you okay with Akia? What are your general preferences, the bank's preferences for the property? Where should it be located? How far from the station? Can it be like in a resort town or not? And get the vibe from there. So Prestia does it all in English. So you can just reach out to them and schedule a visit at one of their branches, or just call their home loan number and arrange for an appointment.
Nice.
I think that's the best bet. But Tracy and Ziv also have something to talk about, those sort of investment properties and how you're going to manage them. So I'll hand over to Ziv and Tracy. But just prior to doing that, can I just do a very, very brief room reset? Thank you people for joining this room. We're talking about buying a house or buying property in Japan, buying real estate in Japan. I am a real estate agent. I focus on family home purchases here in Tokyo. Ziv on the far right is a buyer's agent. So a buyer's advocate rather. So he helps investors, foreign investors and even domestic investors buy investment properties here in Japan, and not necessarily Tokyo, but also all regions around Japan. And he'll do due diligence and find you some good properties with high yields, and also does the property management. And Tracy in the middle is the Minpaku queen, the hostess with the mostest. And she can tell you everything about how to manage a short-term stay or Airbnb-style property, short-term and, you know, with a medium-term sort of furnished apartment stay type of places. So amongst the three of us, we should be able to answer most of your questions regarding real estate in Japan. So if anyone else has a question that they'd like to ask, please push the hand raise icon at the bottom of your screen, and we'll bring you up to the audience to speak. But right now, I'm going to hand back over to Ziv and Tracy to speak to about Leah's question, purchasing a property in a... But buy a place where you can snowboard.
And have a summer thing. Like, that was the only way I would commit to, like, searching for one. I'm like, it's not just for you.
Cool. I just came back from Nozawa Honsen, and I loved it. So if you do get a place over there, I'll be a regular visitor.
Yay.
So, yeah, I just wanted to say, and Tracy will probably expand on that much more than I can. But firstly, when you said you might be... maybe getting some profit on it. Was that when you're not using it, when you're not there, or are you talking about renting out rooms to people who might come to visit while you're there?
It'll probably be a bit of both, because my work is quite flexible. Well, I can work from wherever within reason. So like I could be up there a lot, and I'm not even sure. It was just like a thought, like, would we rent it out, or would we only really, like, you know, rent it out to friends and family that, you know, want to come to Japan, sort of thing, like keep it small. So yeah, it was just trying to find out all our options, because it can be, you know, everything can be a bit mixed, and we've heard so many different things, and of other friends up in the mountains, like with property for personal and for investment / renting out.
Gotcha. So I'll let Tracy answer that one.
In Japan, it's different from in a lot of other countries. A lot of people think, well, I'll get a place and I'll just bung it up on Airbnb, and the money will fall out of the money tree. does not quite happen like that in Japan, because a couple of years ago some regulations came in. You needed to have your property registered with the Hokkenjo, which is the health department at the city office, where you need to cover. Often the property needs to be retrofitted with some fire safety issues, some special alarms. If it was in a mansion, like a multi-unit complex, a condo, it needed to have, if there was a kumiai, which is the homeowners association, you need to have a sign-off from the head of that. And a lot of kumiais were putting into the bylaws that that short-term rentals were not okay. This is why I have many houses. That's when I do my business. I do mostly houses. So there's a couple of hoops to jump through. When you jump through them, it's not insurmountable. When you jump through them and you do it, there is money to be made, and especially seasonally in snowboarding places or beach places, there certainly is money. But you do need to be fully regulated, otherwise you will not be able to list online. And then your only option really is to rent to family and friends, because they are pretty strict here. So if you're caught renting without a license, the fines are pretty steep, and they're civil servants with nothing much else to do, so they do go around and look for people. So my advice is just don't think about trying to go under the radar if you are going to be doing it for money as a supplemental income. That said, I think it's a really good business because I'm in it, I do it. But you have to really have all your ducks in a row, and you have to have your due diligence on things like, how many days a year can you rent in your area? Do you need a hotel license versus a minpaku license? And you also need to be working with a registered minpaku kundi. And a minpaku kundi is a manager who, they're the ones who vouch for you and vouch for the guests if there's any problems, like the garbage isn't being sorted correctly, or there's a fire, they need to talk to somebody, and that's when the minpaku kundi they tap them on the shoulder and say, "Oi, what's happening there?" So there is a lot to the business. I don't want to discourage you, but I just want to make sure that you go into it with your eyes open. And it's not like, you read stories on the internet in other countries, for example, in America or Australia, where you just put it up on Airbnb and then you're done. It's a lot more regulated than that. So, does that help?
Yeah, no, that's great. It's just, it's really good to just hear it from people that are actually doing it actively. I mean, we still haven't even decided, like, whether it would be a rental investment or half rental investment, whatever. I mean, I kind of like the idea of it just being our house and our house for us to go up to. But I understand, if you have a house just sitting there empty, it would make sense if you can go through all the hoops and make sure it's safe and regulated to make some money off it, because or else it's just a sitting duck, really. But yeah.
If it was me, that would be a yes from me. But as I said, I know the business, and I would be going into it with, knowing what I'd have to do to get there. My next investment will be a beach property that I do exactly this with, that I can use for myself when I want to, when my family want to, but also be open to short-term rentals. So when I buy a property, it's going to be in the right zoning. I know that I know the steps that I have to go through to get the license, and then I'll be listing it and sharing it. But because yes, there's so much opportunity with an empty property that in an area which is in demand. So it's, for me, it's a no-brainer. For some people, they don't want to share their house, and that's, I understand that as well. So it's not for everybody. So when I work with people, I make sure that this is really what they want to do, and that they're going into it with their eyes open.
No, that's great, because yeah, we actually looked at a property in Hakuba, and it was actually under a management. So it was an investment company, and they were very good, very honest. They sent us through the last 3 years' financials, And how it worked was, like, they were, like, 12 villas. You buy a villa and, you know, you have certain dates up there. Then the rest of the time they rent it out and you split the profit amidst the 12 properties. And when we got the financials, we were just like, wow, really? That's it? It doesn't... I mean, maybe they just haven't been that strong yet, but it
was not
worth
their investment. That's a very particular scheme, though. That's a very particular... kind of like timesharing, right?
No, you own the property, but there's a huge management company and, you know, they send us through the spreadsheet of, like, you know, this is how much we earned, but this is the cost of everything, like maintenance stuff, da-da-da. This is the profit, and now this is the profit split amid, equally amongst 12 villas. So even if your villa doesn't get hired out, like, you know, you will get a little bit of what everyone else gets, which is a positive, but considering their location, the style of the villas, it was just really surprising to see the little profit that was made.
Sounds like everyone with a hand had it in your pocket, basically.
I think one of the ways, I don't want to say around, but if, for example, you look into a particular property and you really love the place, and it looks like that particular area is going to be more challenging for Minpaku compliance or licensing, rather than give up on it, you could rent it out by the month. So as long as you've got an actual tenancy lease in place for a minimum period of 1 month, and it doesn't mean that the person will actually be using the place for the entire month, they could be using it for just 2 weeks, but you make the lease out for an entire month, then you don't actually fall under the Minpaku regulations. And in those cases, you can definitely rent it out as if it was a normal rental property, and you don't have to comply with anything. So that's it's just an easier way to go about it if you think that your guests might be coming in for, say, 2 weeks at a time, as opposed to just like a week or a day in, day out kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Thanks. But
yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of information to sift through.
That's absolutely true, Ziv. Absolutely true. The only caveat with that is that you are not allowed to list that property on Airbnb. You do have to work with your own, you know, with a property manager who can find clients for for monthly clients on their own, you know, with their own channels and their own funnels and what have you. So
yeah,
you're going to pay a percentage for that, for their work and for their for the work that they've already done to put those funnels into place.
Absolutely. Yeah, in her case, I wasn't even thinking about Airbnb. I was just thinking, well, if you are kind of considering it to be only a family and friends thing, you could expand that a little bit, just make a social media page or a little home page where you actually say that you've got a home in Japan that you can lease out for a few weeks at a time, and then get people to contact you directly and run a lease with them directly. You wouldn't even necessarily have to go with a management company, but you could potentially make up for the expenses for the time that you're not using it, or maybe a little bit extra.
That's really interesting. Thank you, Ziv.
Okay. Yeah, just if anyone else in the audience has a question, please feel free to push the hand raise icon at the bottom of your screen, and we can bring you up and ask anything about buying real estate in Japan, be it your own home, personal home, or investment property, or typical investments, or if it's even for a short-term stay, Airbnb type stuff. Then the three moderators at the top have you covered in terms of expertise.
Guys, I have one more question. Yeah, sure. I was wondering, what are the regulations on visa and residence permit for people who would be making larger sums of investment? Or is there basically any relations or correlations between a residence permit and long-term visa and any sorts of investments into the real estate?
I can answer that one. Yeah, we've actually had quite a few discussions on that with customers recently and with immigration lawyers. So technically, there is no investment visa for real estate. So the fact that you've invested in real estate doesn't actually grant you a visa. And the idea behind it is that because Japan doesn't have any limitations on foreigners buying and renting out and managing property in Japan, you don't really need a visa to do that sort of thing. But the way that you can get around that is if you actually run a business of some sort. So the minimum amount for investment to get a business manager visa is pretty low compared to property purchase prices. It's just 5 million yen. So
you could, and people regularly do, just set up a kebab shop and get a visa that way. The thing is that, number one, to renew the visa every year, you need to show that your Japanese income is at a certain level, and I think that's about 2.5 million yen per dependent. So one for the visa applicant, and if you've got any family members that are not generating income, that's another 2.5 million for each of them. And then you actually have to show a business plan, a fairly detailed business plan, and you have to show that you're actually doing work. So you could set up, for example, an asset management company and own properties under that company name, but just the fact that you're owning the properties and getting rental income, if you're using third parties to do the management as opposed to your own staff, that would not qualify you for either an application or a renewal of the visa. So you have to actually have a company set up and doing work beyond just collecting rental income, definitely to renew the visa, but also to qualify for it in the first place. So if you're really going to be getting into property investment at a level that justifies that income, because don't forget that, you know, company upkeep as far as accounting and minimum corporate tax goes, that's already another somewhere between $2,000 to $4,000 a year. So you have to make sure that the income that you're generating justifies that. Frankly, I mean, if property investment is your thing and you really want to get deeply into that, then that's a great thing to go for. But otherwise, there are easier businesses to set up and qualify for a business visa with.
Thank you so much. Now, I was mainly asking due to the fact that I work with some clients who are interested in some sort of, you know, distributing their assets in different countries and finding ways to move their families in an easier way. Countries like Dubai, Malta, some places provide much easier solution in that sense. I was just wondering, how would the situation be in Japan? So from what I understand, it's basically a no from your answer in a simple, I mean, looking at it from a simple perspective. But yes, thanks for the info.
No, it's not a no, it's just not as straightforward. In other countries, like you said, you invest in property, you get a business visa. Here, you actually have to run a business and generate income. But if you're into that and you're into hiring one or two staff members and renting a small office space, then it's definitely doable, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Guys, I just quickly want to say thank you for the information, but I'm going to pop out. Have a great day, guys. Chat to you soon.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, you too.
Question to Ziv. Yeah, so you mentioned about you're trying to work with your clients to maximize the yield of a property. And for some people, they are really wondering is, do I have enough money to start like buying an investment property, even if it's a small one? And what is the average yield you would typically get in Tokyo and how do you maximize it? So is there any general thoughts about that?
Guys, I also wanted to quickly say bye. Sorry to interrupt you, Ziv. Thank you so much, guys. Emil, Batran, Ziv, and I hear from you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
See you, Priya. So the answer is definitely yes. It's a lot more affordable than it is in other developed countries. I'm not sure that Tokyo would definitely be the most cost-efficient place to hit for that sort of entry level. In Tokyo, so like Emil was saying before, really the cash cows, the ones that generate, that tend to generate the best yields are studios or one-bedroom apartments, say 1R, 1K, 1DK, 1LDK maybe at most. And that's kind of the sweet spot as far as size goes for the best yield. And age-wise, they can't be too new. You obviously don't want them too old because then maintenance piles up and nobody wants to live there. But if you get something between, say, 1990 to 2000 or 2005, 8 if you're lucky, that tends to be the sweet spot age-wise. So out of Tokyo, these properties in good cities, I mean, not in Inaka, in good central cities, these properties start at about 3-4 million yen, so 30-40,000 US, and they generate yields of anywhere between 6-9% net pre-tax, so not taking into account your individual income or corporate tax situation, but including all of the purchase and known management costs. So that would be the minimum, and that would be the yield. In Tokyo and Osaka specifically, you're probably looking at entry level of somewhere like 8 or 9 million yen, and the yields would be maybe 6% if you're very lucky before tax, most likely more like 4.5-5%. So Tokyo is not necessarily the best place to benefit from that.
Wow, that's pretty easy entry. I didn't imagine the number to be that low. So you're saying that, you know, 5 million to 7 million yen, you can get a property in like Osaka or some other city, and with like 7 to 9% yield annually.
Osaka is getting quite similar to Tokyo, so in Osaka it's going to be a bit more challenging, but we do occasionally see those properties there as well. The yields are lower, but you can sometimes buy into there, I wouldn't say 5 to 7, but maybe 7, 8. But other cities, definitely. So satellites and other secondary cities around Tokyo and Osaka, like Kobe, Yokohama, Kawasaki. Yokohama is not really a secondary city, it's Japan's second biggest. Sapporo, Kyoto, Fukuoka, Nagoya, and other prefectural capitals, second-tier cities like Saitama, Kumamoto down in Kyushu, Nagasaki, although Nagasaki specifically, the population is a bit on decline. All of those places, definitely, yes.
Wow, awesome. Thanks a lot. And you mentioned about, like, you know, having an asset management company. So I'm just wondering, from the being tax efficient, and in order not to be taxed so much on your income from those properties, is opening a property like asset management company to manage, let's say, one or two properties of the ones you put around like 5 million, 10 million, something like that. Is it advisable to go that route, or you just buy it under your name and you start getting the money under your name and then you're going to be taxed on it?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I was mentioning that in relation to a visa, to a business manager visa. If you're not going to be owning properties that generate at least $40,000-$50,000 dollars a year, it's not worth it, because you're going to be paying again somewhere between $2,000 to $4,000 bucks a year. It does become profitable beyond that level because corporate tax is capped, whereas individual tax continues to go up. So once you're getting past that $40,000-$50,000 dollars a year in income, then it becomes there's also a lot more that you can claim as deductions when you've got a corporate structure, but definitely not for these cheaper properties now.
All right, thanks.
Okay, so thank you. So are there any other questions from the audience? We've been going for an hour and 10 minutes now. So yeah, if there are any other questions, please raise your hand and we'll bring you up on stage, and you can ask us anything about real estate, either personal home and home loan financing, investment properties in and around Japan, and also short-term stays, Airbnb-style rental, etc. Hold on, we do have someone has raised their hand. Nick, let me bring you up on stage.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Nick, how are you doing?
Bring me up. Yeah, this room has been very informative so far, so thank you for doing this.
Cool, I'm glad. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm originally from the States, and I was thinking about investing in real estate in Tokyo. I live here for maybe the past 4 or 5 years. And if I were in the States, I would want to invest in a multi-tenancy type of situation, like a full house unit with maybe 2 or 3 units within it. I'm not sure what kind of market there is for that type of building in Tokyo.
They do exist in Tokyo, definitely, like they exist in all other cities, and they're very good investments. They kind of hit a really best of all world situation, because while Japan is not necessarily a capital growth environment, sometimes, especially in big cities and in good periods, appreciation does happen. And, you know, 2012 to 2019 is a good example of that. So if you do want to benefit from that, as well as from the potential of being a bit more creative with your property, because if you own the entire structure, then you can also do a lot more with it. Whether it'll be okay for Minpaku or not is a question of whether the zoning, the particular local municipality allows that and to what extent, but at least you're more creative as far as renovations, or even, you know, in the future, if it gets too much to maintain, to tear it down, turn it into a warehouse or a shipping facility or even a parking lot. So there is that benefit of it. And you're definitely going to be able to find tenants for it. That's not going to be an issue. But again, same sort of thing that Bartman was asking about. The yield in Tokyo would be fairly low. So price compared to the rental yields is not super attractive in Tokyo. If you go even, you know, an hour out, say Saitama or Yokohama, you're already looking at, say, 4 to 8 unit blocks that you could potentially purchase for as little as 300,000-400,000 bucks. But in Tokyo, that's not going to be possible. And yield will be a lot lower again. So can I ask why specifically Tokyo? Because I'm not sure if you're aware, but with Japanese tenancy laws, when a property is tenanted, you can't actually enter the units for inspections or anything. So you're going to be a remote investor, even if you're living around the block.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess my thought is that I would want long-term tenants. And the reason I'm curious about this is because I would like to buy a property. And if I were to buy a property, it would be a house. And if it were a house, you know, and if it was just for myself, obviously I'd have to foot the bill for the entire property. But if I can find some sort of multi-tenancy situation, I think it would be much more like financially viable for me to get the money from them to help me pay my own mortgage, right? So I would be living in this building as well.
You mean the tenants would pay you to purchase the property?
Oh, no. So if I have, for example, one building with 3 units in it, and I live in one of the units, and I have tenants for the other 2, then it would help me to pay the mortgage off faster, theoretically, for this property, right?
Emil could comment on that, I think.
Yeah, so let me speak to that. This common situation that you're speaking about, in order to make it, a viable, feasible, is you want to get a home loan. So Japanese home loans are great. They are 100% financing, very low interest rates, 0.5 to 0.7% interest rates. However, it needs to be for your primary residence, not for an investment. However, you can possibly get a home loan for dwelling, like what you're talking about, if this following condition is met. Your primary residence portion is over 50% of the total property size. So think of a two-story building, like almost like a house, but a large, like two-story wooden structure. The entire top floor is your primary residence, and the first floor, the bottom floor, is maybe 3 one-bedroom apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So your primary residence on the second floor is at just maybe 52% or 53% of the total building size, square meterage. Then you could still qualify for a home loan
with
a property in that structure. That's probably the only situation where I think you can kind of get, like, do it successfully, where you rent out the bottom ones, and that is basically getting some rental investment property within your home loan.
Yeah, because right? I actually saw a property like that on Sumo that was exactly that, and I was curious as to why it was set up that way, but that makes total sense.
Yeah, and that's basically it. Also, with wooden structures, yeah, they're not going to have, how can I say it, like, often, look, if you're, forget about the wooden structure comment, if you're wealthy enough to buy a building that can afford 3 or 4 individual apartments, you're not going to want to live in one apartment, right? Because 800,000 dollars, like 80 million yen, to buy such a property. If you can afford 80 million yen on a property, you're not going to want to live in a 30 square meter 1LD, right? It doesn't match your sort of maturity and your age, and you know, with that kind of income that you're getting, you're not going to want to live in a place.
I mean, I think that just depends on the person, right? But yeah, I see what you're saying.
going to sort of look at it. But that's kind of why you don't see so many of that available and why the banks won't finance you that one where you just live in one of the four.
Okay, but that does make sense, though, what you said about the 50%. And I think that's... I'll definitely look into that a little more.
Sure. Do keep in mind that banks are a little bit stricter when it comes to that. It's not like, oh, hey, it's under, you know, the rental... It's only 48%. That's fine. Great. We'll give it to you with no questions asked. No, they are a bit stricter on scrutinizing that. Then you also need to think. So, look, even when I first for my first property, I had that in mind. What the advice I tell from my personal experience, I've got three kids now, is when you have something in that kind of layout, it's going. You need to think. Well. How, like, do you, are you married? Do you have kids? What's your family?
No, nothing like that, no.
Okay, and, well, you guys see, are you planning to or not? What's the slightly longer term strategy? Right?
Like within 5 years, maybe, right?
Yeah, within 5 years, like, you know, like, are you engaged or do you plan on having kids? Do you think you're going to have a family? Because in that case, maybe that top floor is not going to be sufficient for your short to midterm kind of, your midterm needs, your family growth.
I guess with that type of loan though, and under that those conditions for the loan, is it a binding condition where it needs to be your primary residence for a certain amount of years before you can move out and rent that property out?
Oh, well, you can move out, but the problem is you're not going to get another home. They're not going to give you another home loan because you've already purchased this one. If you want another home loan, first one.
Gotcha.
Right. So you can have it as an investment, but then you can only rent. Just say you rent out your top floor that was your primary residence. You rent it out. You want to move to a family home. Well, you go to the bank. Hey, I want another home loan. Give me another $1 million. No. We gave you $800,000 for your first home. If you want another million, you're going to have to sell the first one.
Gotcha.
They won't double leverage you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are great things to think about. I always thought as a concept it makes sense, but maybe from a practical standpoint, there's all these things that I haven't thought about. So
yeah, and also remember, like, it depends on where in Tokyo. Like, if it's 1K, like the people that are going to be living next to you, if the rent is 80,000 yen or 100,000 yen a month, is what you're making from it. You know, like, what kind of my take always is, well, if I've got my young kids running around and playing, I like family-oriented neighborhoods, okay? And I don't want these singles that are, like, you know, new graduates or people that have just moved to Tokyo and they just started their first job, just, you know, or university students living right below me. You know, I'm at a stage in my life where I don't want to live in that kind of area. I want to live in a nice residential area where my kids can play with all the other neighborhood kids, etc. So that's something. But, however, in terms of what you're saying, you know, Tracy, can I sort of, you know, do you have something to say about that house setup?
Sure. I mean, I actually built a house. My house is actually built custom made with an Airbnb in the property. And I use that as, it was built as a multi-generational house. It has two entrances, but then an interlocking door where I can lock when there's guests, and when there's family come and stay, I can unlock. So that was a custom build, and that helps me pay my mortgage. I don't think I actually, this is being recorded, I don't think I actually declared it to the bank that it was going to be used for rentals, but it was certainly built, you know, on the understanding that the doors could be locked and that had two entrances. So and the bank was fine with it. My dream client as a manager would be somebody who has actually bought a building with, say, three or four two-bedroom units in Tokyo, because I could manage that and make a fortune when the borders are open, and I could make a fortune on that for everybody as a win-win. You know, as soon as things are starting to move again, I'm actually going to be looking for investors who want to do that and want to invest in me to
to run that and manage that for them. So
I got a few of those for you, Tracy. Just let me know.
Was that that's really what I'll be looking for moving forward, because I'm very, very bullish on what it's going to be like as soon as the borders are open. Unfortunately, we just got the bad news last night that the Olympics will not be open for spectators, from international spectators. So that was a bit of a blow for me personally. But it just means that the pent-up demand will be even more when Japan finally gets their vaccine story sorted. So I guess I'm rambling a little bit, but having my dream would be as a short-term rental host, you know, a building with two-bedroom, three-bedroom listings that were in the same building, you know, three or four. They're all in the same place. They're dedicated to short-term rentals. They're in the right zone where I can get a hotel license, and I could pimp those babies out and really make a lot of money. So you're as an investor, it wouldn't be that you're getting capital growth, because as Ziv and Emil can explain to you what the market on that is like here in Japan, but I could certainly make good cash flow on a month-to-month basis over a year that will, you know, that's a massive return compared to a long-term rental situation.
Tracy, quick question for you. Sure. Would you only be able to manage these in and around Tokyo, or would you be able to do that in other parts of the country as long as it's a big enough city?
I've got systems that I can franchise, if you like. So, you know, at one point here, I was running a seven-figure business. I wasn't doing that on my own, and I wasn't doing that running 24 hours. I've got systems in place that automate a lot of things and that can be taught and that can be downloaded and be managed from afar. So I can do that, but it would, you know, it would just mean that I'd have to have the right partners in that area. So that's a local manager / housekeeper running a team of cleaners. So that's what that would be. And then a central hub that runs things like the communications. So the communications can be run from anywhere, but you really do need boots on the ground for housekeeping / cleaning staff, because they are the lifeblood of the business. If you haven't got your cleaning systems and your communication systems down, you're dead in the water. So it's a hospitality business. There are people sleeping in, you know, there's heads in beds. And so there is a duty of care, and there's also like a real hospitality thing to it. But I can teach that, so. Because I'm awesome.
Sorry, Emil, just one final question on that. When you say teach that, would you be able to teach that to a local, maybe kind of flexible, open-minded, 100% Japanese, non-English-speaking property manager?
Sure, I can do that. I do seminars and webinars now in English, and I could do that in my Japanese. It'll be poor Japanese, but it will still be Japanese, because what I do believe is that it's a hospitality business, which means it's people. The delivery system of my teaching, of my work, can be in whatever language, but the values and the essence of the business is consistent, whether, you know, the guests are from, you know, they're human guests. So, you know, we have human needs. It doesn't, you know, it transcends race and culture and language. So yes, I can teach these things. No problem.
All right. When the borders open, let's have the discussion again.
Have it before when the borders are open, it'll be too late.
Noted.
We do have Alex who's come up, but I just want to go to you, Nick. Another question you want to follow up with?
No, I just want to say thank you guys so much. That it was really insightful, and I have some new things to consider. So thank you so much.
There is one thing, Nick, that I would like to add about what Trace mentioned in her house layout. It's called a nisetai jutaku. So what's very common in Japan is they have, you know, two generations living in the same building. So for example, in my house, right, if my mother-in-law, my Japanese wife's mum, wanted to also live with us, right, it's quite common for the grandparents to, or the parents to live with the family. So they'll actually have like a separate entrance on the first floor for their grandparents to live in. And now the grandparents, the first floor will be like a self-contained unit almost. Or they'll have a little kitchenette, a small kitchen area, a bathroom, and a LDK. But interconnecting that within the same building, so there's two external doors. One door to get into the grandparents' property, and then another door that goes maybe staircase straight upstairs, and that goes to the second and third floor for the primary residence for the family with kids, right? But there is generally, with the Nisetai Jutaku, an interconnecting door in between, right? Because there's still family that's living there. And that's what Tracy was alluding to. And that's quite common in Japan. That's not considered, hey, it's a rental on the first floor. That's a Nisetai Jutaku, and it's for grandparents to come and live, right? It's very, very common. And that's what Tracy was talking about. Whether you just close that off and then do it as a rental, then the bank won't really know about it. But if you were to get a property with two or three sort of apartments downstairs and none of them are really interlinked with the upper floor, then the bank will assess it as, hey, this is purely in like rental properties downstairs. So Nisetai Jutaku, what makes it a bit different is that it's got the interlock there. The two properties are actually connected internal.
Interesting. That's really an important nuance. So yeah, I definitely will look into that more. Thank you.
Yeah. And if you search for Nisetai Jutaku rather than, you know, properties with apartment downstairs, you'll actually see a lot more.
Cool. I will do that. Thank you so much.
Sure. Okay. Alrighty. It's 3 o'clock, but we've got Alex and Samuel have sort of come up on stage. So we'll ask your questions, but then we'll wrap it up, I think, after that. Alex, how are you doing? What's your question?
Hi, guys. Then you should ask Samuel to have his questions. I just want to say I love Tracy's energy, and I'm actually managing a cleaning company here in Tokyo for front desk, cleaning, consumables, linens, etc. So I would love to team up or see what we can do. But please ask Samuel instead, so he probably has some questions for you. Thanks, though.
Okay, thanks a lot, Alex. Samuel.
Yeah, thanks so much. Sorry, I came in late, so I missed a lot of it. But so apologies if you've already gone over this. But my wife and I bought a single detached family home in West Tokyo. And my question is related to inheritance taxes. So I've done some research, and I'm still confused about, like, gifts for down payments and, like, how the regulations for those work. So my father-in-law is a Hong Kong Chinese citizen, and he wanted to give us some money to buy property as an investment property here in Tokyo. And I'm having trouble finding out, like, what the taxes would be on that, like what obligations there are. So is there any resource you could recommend for like how to find out more information about like inheritance tax or I guess gifts for down payments?
On our YouTube channel, I think, if you follow me and send me a message on any of the Insta or Twitter or LinkedIn, I'll send you a link directly to that video. We've linked to one of the accountants that we work with that did a series of videos on inheritance tax. So I think most of your questions will be answered there. And if not, you can just contact him directly. He's very chatty, so he'll be happy to share that information with you.
Thanks so much.
And Tracy, you wanted to say something earlier, I think, to Alex?
Yes, sorry. I've friended Alex, so if he's running Lin companies, sure, let's talk.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much. We've got one more person who's put their hand up, and then I think that'll be the last question. So, Eric.
Thanks for allowing me on the stage. Question, so I built a house over in the Shodan area, and I'm interested in purchasing another property. And my understanding is that second property I apply for a loan would be considered a based on your experience, how, I guess, painstakingly, well, how difficult would it be to actually get the second loan if it's considered a commercial property? And not using my you know, going through my company that I own, you know, for as the main purpose for use of that building.
Okay, so forget the discussion about it's going to be like a commercial property or an investment. I think the term you're referring to is an investment property for the second one, an investment loan. That's not necessarily the case. You said, sorry, the first one you built was in the Shonan area?
Yes, I'm over, I'm close to Hayama, and so I built my home over here in Yokosuka, and I used to live in Tokyo, but, you know, now wife, two kids, much better for family life over here. I'm close to the beach and all of that, so we're looking to go back to Tokyo and Yokohama, so I was thinking about finding something where maybe I have commercial on the first floor, you know, office on the second, an apartment on the third, or an apartment on the second, a commercial on the first, something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in that case, it's going to be likely an investment, like an investment loan that you're going to need, a second house. If you want to just a house, right? For example, just another house for yourself or an apartment, just for you and your family to stay in, and not the office space and that other investment sort of aspect of it, right? Then there is an option for a second home loan. Right, it's called.
Okay.
It's a loan. It's a jutaku loan for your second. It's a loan for a second home. They refer to it as second home, and it's kind of okay to justify in your situation because you want to be in Tokyo, and your first home is in a completely different area. It's quite far away. It's over 1 hour commute, right? Right. So it could be possible, but. How much they loan you would be a bit restricted, and this is what I was saying to Leah earlier in, which you may have missed. You know, it depends how much your income is and how much of your borrowing capacity you've already used for your first purchase. Okay. So if your maximum, based on your income, the most that a bank will loan you is, let's say, 70 million yen. So nanasenman, 70. 70 million yen,
okay.
And you've already spent 50 million yen on your first property, on your first loan, then they're going to say, well, your borrowing capacity is only going to be 20 million yen.
Okay.
Right? So that's probably the bigger deciding factor. You can possibly get a second home loan, but you can't over-leverage yourself. Okay? And that's based largely on your income. Okay? However, you did mention that. That's in general. If you just want another residence for yourself here in Tokyo or in a different area, but you did mention. Well, what if your company were? So just to get this right, what if your company were to purchase it and it would have some like office space, etc.? Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So I was renting office space the virtual office down in a Omotesando, and then when COVID hit. We closed that down, and so I run my business out of my home. You know, get to write that off and everything. So we're looking for, say, commercial residential. But the key is if I can get just a second home, a residential, you know, loan, that'd be great. And then I can always just rent, you know, commercial office space or to a share office again or something like that. So I'm glad that I would be able to apply for a second residential loan. That would be good, and that would be, I guess, the priority for me in the Tokyo area or Yokohama.
Sure. I suggest, and this is exactly what I said to Eric, do you speak Japanese quite well?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah, so
sure.
I bought the home. It's in my name. The land's in my name. All of that. So, yeah, so I have, you know, interesting, sometimes difficult experience, but it was pretty positive overall with the bank and the realtor.
Okay, sure. If you want to just find out, so the first thing you need to do, right, is just find out how much you can borrow for a second property. And that's quite an easy calculation for the bank. The bank will want to see your tax withholding slip. And this is, again, this is a ballpark figure. They're going to want to do the credit assessment and check your stuff before they give the formal approval. But just to get an idea, based on, assuming all of that is okay, based on what your remaining borrowing capacity is, the easy thing to do is take your tax returns, your most recent tax returns and your tax withholding slip. I suspect if you have your own company, you're doing a computation, your own tax declaration, right?
Yeah,
so take that for the past 2 or 3 years to the bank, and also your information about your existing home loan. So every year, your existing home loan, the bank will send you a Zandaka Shomesho. It says what your current loan repayment is, right? And so what your current loan balance is, how much it was at the outset, what the current new one is, and also your Hensai Yotekyo, what your mortgage repayment schedule. Take that to the bank and say, this is how much, and to any bank, take that to the bank and say, this is how much money, this is my income, this is my existing loan. I would like to buy a house in Tokyo. How much more can I borrow for a second house? Okay?
Okay.
And they'll calculate it, and they'll give you a number of approximately how much they can loan you extra, because you've already extended some of your, you've already used some borrowing capacity for your first home. So that's why you need to see how much they'll give you for your second one.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. Very, very helpful. Thank you.
No worries. Oh, which area in Tokyo are you looking at?
I don't know. I used to live in Shinjuku, Shinjuku Gyoen Mae. And then I went back to the States and then came back to Japan actually after 10 years. So I don't know. Family friendly. Of course, transportation, I'll have a car and all that type of stuff, but nothing wild. I like quiet, so to speak. But I like to, to get out and mix it up with the family. So just something that's family friendly. I'm pretty open.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, no worries. I think that's what you should do, is speak to some of the big banks. SMBC, MUFJ, Rizona, Mitsubishi. MUFJ, SMBC, Rizona, and SMBC. MUFJ. Mitsubishi, Rizona, SMBC, and Mizuho, that's it. Sorry.
I'm with SMBC right now, so I'll go back to them and do that.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll give you the second one. You should go to a different lender. Yeah. It's actually kind of...
I gotcha. Okay.
It's counterintuitive. Okay. Yeah, the same lender won't give it to you. Sometimes they're a bit strict on that. And also Prestia Bank promote their second home loan. So speak with them.
Okay.
Give them a call and see what you can do. That's what I suggest.
All right. Really appreciate that.
Do you have permanent residency, or is your spouse Japanese?
Yeah, my spouse is Japanese. I am now, I work for the U.S. government, but I'm going to retire in July, and since I'll go back on a Japanese visa, I guess they're going to give me my spousal visa first, and then I'll apply for my PR at the same time. I have about 27 years in Japan or whatever.
Are you SOFA?
I'm SOFA, but I was able to buy my house on SOFA, and that, no problem. It actually helped five other people buy houses the guys that are in the military, I'm not, that were on SOFA. And so that was not an issue.
Okay, yeah, was that SMBC Financial?
Yeah, that was SMBC. No, it was a bank, not financial. So I went to... I went to three different realtors, and we looked at properties, mansions out in Yokohama, price range around $700,000 to a low of $400,000. And, they all wanted 20% down, and then I said no. One said, how about 10, and we loaned the other 10. I said no. I want to put zero down, and we don't do that in Japan. So at the end, I bought my home newly constructed with 0% down. We had a very good rate. I made good income, disability pay, my retirement pay and all of that. I'll still make a very good yearly. And so, but I want to buy, you know, another place. So I'll be off of SOFA in a couple of months and back to a regular visa.
Okay, yeah. My issue isn't really the SOFA. The visa status is one thing, but rather, I know with SOFA, if the income is not Japan-sourced on your tax return, that could be that's how they sort of calculate it. I know there are some banks in that will give it to SOFA, but do you have a 35-year loan mortgage, or is it like a 20-year or 10-year?
No, so because of my age, I can't get a 35-year loan. So I'm 58 now, and when I applied for my loan, I still didn't have Japan-based income outside of my company, but I didn't use that in the calculation. I strictly used my disability and, you know, my U.S. government income. But once I retired, so I'll, get my Social Security. I also qualify here in Japan and everything. But I'll still, again, bring in a good yearly. And I'll add the Japanese-based income if I need. When I apply for the loans using my Japanese company, but I don't plan on doing that.
Sure. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I think, look, with the complex situation that with your SOFA status or your foreign sourced income, I think definitely just speak with the banks. Speak with a bunch of banks. Maybe the mega banks won't want to work with you, but you look sound like you've already experienced with some other banks as well. Speak to the ones that were kind of friendly, even if it wasn't for zero down, like if they want a 10% down or 20% down, that's still pretty reasonable. Speak with them and see how much they'll give you. I can definitely help you with a Tokyo property purchase, but you'll need to, but in terms of the financing, yeah, with the SOFA guys, usually it's a bit challenging for myself in Tokyo for financing.
All right.
Cool.
Yep,
all right. Thank you, Eric, man. Cool.
Thank you, man.
All right. We will want to wrap this up shortly. So the very last question, I'll ask Miho-san, who's just come up, and then we can wrap it up. Hi, Miho, how are you doing?
Just before that, Emil, sorry, I just wanted to, because the few people joined us a bit late, I've noticed in the audience, this room is being recorded. So if you want to listen to all the questions and the answers, either hit me up directly or just Google or go to the iTunes store and look for Japan Real Estate Podcast. There's only one. And this recording will be posted maybe in a few weeks' time, but it will definitely be posted at some stage. So you can tune into it then.
Hi. I didn't know this was being recorded, so I thought I have some tips about buying a second house on a loan, but I don't think I'm going to talk here, so I think I'm going to go down. Thank you.
Okay, no worries, Miho. Thank you. Anyway, that's completely fine. In that case, let's close up this room. Right now we've got this room scheduled for every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. So 1:30 to about 3. We've gone a little bit over time. Lots of questions being asked. So if you would like to ask any of us a question directly. So my name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, and I focus on personal family homes, home purchases, and the relevant financing. If you have any questions about that, then feel free to message me on my Instagram DM. Ziv on my far right can help with anything about investment properties in and around all of Japan. And Tracy in my middle, the hostess with the mostest, if you have any questions about short-term rental, Airbnb-style rental, and the related management required, please reach out to her and she can assist you with any questions you may have about that. If you do like this room, please, you can follow any of us and you'll get alerted when we have this room. Also, we started the Japan Real Estate Club. So if you look just above this title, The Foreigner's Guide to Buying Real Estate in Japan, right above it, it says Japan Real Estate, and there's a little green clubhouse. If you click on that, you can actually follow our this club, the Japan Real Estate Club, and you'll be notified of when we host this room. So right now we do have scheduled every Wednesday at 1:30 for till the end of the month, another three sessions. And we will likely also have a few others thrown in and out throughout the week, depends on on how we go with our regular work-life balance. Okay, is there anything from Tracy or Ziv before we wrap it up?
Thanks, Emil. No, I'm good. Yes, I'm around. I'm awesome. And you can find me through Instagram.
Yeah, same here. You can find me through my profile. There's a few links there. LinkedIn is probably the best way to reach me, but Instagram and Twitter will do as well. And as Emil was saying, if anyone's got a question that they want to ask, which is more private in nature, you don't want it to be recorded, you don't want other people to hear this, feel free to reach out to us directly. We do communicate outside of Clubhouse as well.
Great, thank you. And Mio-san, I'm actually kind of curious what you wanted to contribute and say. So if you like, just as soon as this is finished, I'm going to just reach out and start a private chat just with you, and we can, if that's okay.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's okay. Sure, okay, and I'll do that in a second. All right, guys, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, guys.
We'll close up the room now.
Thank you very much.
I want to jump on a chat with Miho. Can you actually end the room? If that's okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emil.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do that. Guys. So I'll give you folks another minute or so to follow anyone if you wanted to, and then I'll close the room. Thanks for joining us.
All right. So there you go. Long and hopefully useful chat on all things related to the world's second biggest property market. And again, a quick reminder that this particular Clubhouse room is open every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Japan time. Usually lasts anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, depending on what people want to discuss and how active they are with their questions. So if you haven't got a Clubhouse membership yet and you're looking for an invite, hit us up in the comments section or wherever you might have found this episode, and we'll try to sort you out. And if you're in the market for a Japanese business management visa or any other type of visas of the types that we've been discussing on the podcast, or if you're thinking about setting up a company or a branch office of a foreign company in Japan, you want to have a chat with our sponsor, Hiroshi Shimizu, who's an immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener here in Japan. He's just revamped his website as well, and that's looking really good. So go check him out. It's japanimmigrationexperts.com, all one word, japanimmigrationexperts.com. And from our end, if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a short review or at least a star rating on the iTunes store. Help us reach more people who could hopefully benefit from the content we share here as well. So that's it from us for today, folks. Thanks for joining us here on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. We hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.